This is Not the Average Real Estate Podcast by Not Your Average Real Estate Investor. Dipna Boholt used real estate investing strategies to completely replace the income from her accountancy practice with passive income in just 18 months and has since taught thousands of others to do the same. Welcome to the I Love Real Estate Podcast.
Welcome to today's I Love Real Estate Podcast. It's John Gian here hosting and stepping in to help out Dipna, of course, with her massive effort to put this information to you. I hope you're enjoying our Conquer the Chaos virtual replay series here on the podcast. We thought we'd give you an insight into what happened during the live events that we've been running for the last 4 weeks. And we continue today with part four, of course. And as I finished off with part three, is if with this current session, it is a session that is far more valuable if you saw it live, because Dipna does a lot of whiteboard teaching and whiteboard coaching and mentoring. Very difficult for you, many of you, to follow along perhaps here, but you'll get an essence of what she's talking about with regards to advanced structuring, exactly how to buy assets in, what names to buy those assets in, which is probably really important with regards to the current climate as well, with a lot of people being really challenged from even from a business point of view and losing assets, because it's such a shame. People take so much time to build up assets and then to lose them because they don't have the right structures, and buying investments in different entities and the wrong entities proves to be a thing that even accountants sometimes ill advise on. So you'll enjoy this lesson hugely. I'll throw you over to Dipna. And also, as we go through structures, we then will have the opportunity to look at, Dipna covers her property blueprint. And in her property blueprint, she goes through the key three foundations that you should be focusing on, the nine accelerators that are really key to actually create an effective portfolio going forward, regardless of the economic climate. So that's the second half of this podcast. And if you want to attend a live event, there may be still chance that you can actually attend. We're still running these, depending on when you're listening to this, through the early part of June. If you can, great. If you've missed out, unfortunately, you've missed out, you may be able to buy the actual replay series of Conquer the Chaos as well. So enjoy part four. I'll come up the other end and just bid you a farewell. But for now, let's throw you over to part four of Conquer the Chaos.
So I've put in here each one of the structures, just a little bit on each one of them there. You can have a look at that for yourself. How they come together is like this. So I'm just repeating what I did on the board there in a little bit slower process. I'm buying three properties. That's why I need three companies and I need three trusts. If I was only going to buy one property, I need one company, one trust. They're the investment trust. Everything happens in the trust. The trust does the tax returns. The trust does the bank account. Trust does everything. But when you set up a company, you have to have a shareholder. Somebody has to be the shareholder of the trust. So you don't even want to be that shareholder. You want to be as poor and penniless as possible on paper. You don't even want to own the shares. You know, if I sued you and I took those shares away from you and your corporate trustee, I could asset strip that trust as quick as you look at you. So you want to protect the ownership of the shares. Now, the way to do that is in the no present legal entitlement environment, which means a discretionary trust structure. Now, I call this a piggy bank trust. It's not a real name. It's just a name I made up because it's your ultimate piggy bank. And notice that I've got personal trustees of that trust, not companies. Now, that is because it's the end of the line. You know, there is nothing further. That is the ultimate owner of everything. So the piggy bank trust owns the shares in all of your companies. It owns cash at bank. It owns gold. It owns your stamp collection. Nothing that causes you any contingent liability. So no businesses, no employees, no cars, nothing like that. Then if you were in business, then you'd have another structure over here. Not everybody's in business. They probably won't need this structure. But if you were, you'd set up another structure over here, possibly hybrid, but probably discretionary. And the shares in that company would be owned in the piggy bank trust. Then you later on, for tax purposes, not now, but down the track for tax purposes, we would set up this bucket company. And again, that's just a name I made up. The real name for it is a corporate beneficiary, because a corporate beneficiary receives any of the extra income, pays tax at company rates, and then can lend out to other structures to go and buy more property. Clear as mud, right? So I'm telling you, this is how the top end of town works. There's Tinkler, you know, broke, but still controls $40 million worth of assets. Bondi, when he went down, Alan Bond, he still had $60 million worth of assets. And he went through the bankruptcy courts, the criminal courts, and the divorce courts, and still controls $60 million. So when we start to go through these structures, there's a number of things that need together, and ownership is one of them. If we're talking about protection of assets, ownership is one of them. Do not go and sell all of your properties to trust structures. It's going to cost you stamp duty and capital gains tax. There are ways to protect existing assets that you already own in your own name, that you've already stuffed up on. We've got them in our own name. What am I going to do? Oh my God, all this money is at risk. There are protective structures you can use. I'm not going to go through them here. It takes about 45 minutes to explain exactly what can happen at a boot camp, nearly an hour. So I can't go through it here. But understand there's also a lot of misinformation out there. Some people are going to say, oh, just, you know, stick a trust there and put a caveat on and a mortgage and whatever, and we'll call this trust a special name. And no, don't. Please don't. For starters, the name comes from a guy that defrauded the government in England. But apart from that, the tax office is all over it. Now, we actually had some of these documents, had a private ruling done by one of our students, and it was before they signed it. So we had the paperwork reviewed by the tax office, and they confirmed what we thought was the case, which is these special type of trusts that they call them are actually, they cause a capital gains tax event immediately. Now, I'm not going to name the trust, but you can go and look it up onto the ATO website yourself. If you go to the ATO website, so www.ato.gov.au, and you go to the private rulings. Now, this private ruling was published on the ATO website in December of 2018. You can go and read all the ones of 2018 that December, and you can find the one I'm talking about. I'm not going to say it in this forum, but there is a lot of misinformation out there, and a lot of it is going to cost a lot of people a lot of money. This one in particular. So the tax office is all over it now, people are sitting on ticking time bombs with capital gains tax on properties that they didn't sell. They just put this thing in place, and now they're up for a capital gains tax and possibly stamp duty in some cases. Okay, next thing to be very, very conscious of is cross-securitization. Oh my God. Banks are money shops where you choose to buy your money. You do not want to let the banks control all of your assets, because when they control all of your assets, they control you. And if anything should go wrong, they can call in all of your mortgages against all of your assets. So there's a clause in your mortgage documents called the All Monies Clause. And basically what it says is that they can call in any asset that they have a mortgage over. So technically that means if you don't pay your credit card, they can foreclose on your house. Now that's not going to happen, but technically that's what it means. But these clauses are very, very broad, and it's in times like financial difficulty, like in GFC and what we're probably going to come into shortly, then that's when things can get really hairy. Let me tell you a few stories. It's not even that you don't pay the mortgage, okay? It can be because of a bank deciding not to lend to your particular industry. There, I had a client back in the accountancy practice days who he owned a rural service station. And he was in deregulation of the fuel industry. He owned a farm, he owned the service station, he owned a commercial property in town and another property. And one day he got a letter in the mail from the bank, and the bank said that they no longer wanted exposure to rural service station, they had a change in policy, and they're giving him 30 days to refinance all of his loans elsewhere. 30 days. Oh my God. Everything was cross-securitized. He had been with the same bank for 35 years. He had never missed a payment. He was not in arrears. He wasn't even heavily geared. He was 53% geared, so not a lot. Anyway, he'd had his tax returns done up to date, all the rest of it. He couldn't refinance within the 30 days. As soon as he couldn't refinance, he went on to default interest. Now, default interest at the time was at 13.75%. He still kept up his payments. But because he was on default interest with one bank, no other bank would touch him, so he couldn't refinance, which meant that the bank progressively sold up all of his properties over the next 2 years. He was in his late 50s, early 60s. He had a heart attack. He was devastated. He lost all of his property, had no money. And it took him a good 7 years just to be able to get back into the property market, to be emotionally and financially strong enough to get back into that property market. Today, he's in his 70s. Now, he sells mandarin juice at the local market to earn a living on top of his pension. Mandarin juice. You know, he shouldn't have to be doing that. He shouldn't have to be working as hard as he is. But it was the banks that did it. He did nothing wrong other than he was ignorant and he trusted a system that didn't exist. Banks are money shops. You choose where you buy your money. It's called the All Monies Clause. And some All Monies Clauses are so broad that they also include loans that you have with subsidiary banks. So Westpac, as an example, owns St. George. So they could call in loans technically on St. George loans, even though, you know, they might have had a change in policy at Westpac. It's crazy. You know, banks love it. You should hate it. It's very, very dangerous. I could tell you story after story of people that have lost fortunes because of this cross-securitization. One of my mates back in GFC, he had a portfolio of around about $40 million in property, and of that he probably owed 20. And they're all with the one bank. That bank got into financial difficulty in GFC because they'd bought some of these bad loans and stuff. So they just called in a lot of loans, and his was one of them. And he'd done nothing wrong. He was not in arrears. He kept paying his payments, all the rest of it. They called in his loans. And it was only through the skin of his teeth that he was able to save that portfolio. He could have lost the lot. Crazy. Debt. Debt can be a form of passive protection, but it's got to be done properly. Unless you have an actual movement of funds, just whacking a mortgage or a caveat on something is not good enough. It gives you zero asset protection, regardless of what everyone else ever tells you. And tax management needs to be taken into account, and money management needs to be taken into account. These are all forms of that fundamental protection of your assets. Now, while we're on the subject of banks, I just want to run through really quickly. We've had two rate cuts. One of them was passed on. One of them wasn't. And we basically went into protecting deposits, the second one. Any contracts that you are signing now need to have COVID clauses in them. Now, a COVID clause basically says that you can pull out of the contract anytime up to settlement if the bank pulls your funding. They do employment checks on the day of settlement, and they, within 24 hours, some are on the day of settlement, and if they want to pull the loan any time after settlement, they can. So you've got to have COVID clauses in your contracts. You've also, when we talk about the bank holidays, now, there's a number of people who have taken bank holidays. It will restrict your lending. If you're going to take a bank holiday even now, you need to reprice your loan first. There's a lot of advantage in actually getting 2 and 3 year fixed deposits, 2 and 3 year fixed loans at the moment when you look at the cash rates, but only on properties that you're not going to do anything with in that 2 or 3 year period, and that you don't need the equity out of in that 2 or 3 year period as well. But make sure you reprice the loan first, which means that you go and get a lower interest rate if you can elsewhere before you put that holiday in place. Otherwise, once you're on the holiday, you can't then go and reprice after that. So just a little bit on those things. So how did you fare? I mean, this is just the tip of the iceberg. It's the tiniest little bit of what you need to know, but it's a start. It's a start to get you thinking in the right direction. on those questions, how did you fare? Were you mostly read? Let me just have a little look. I'll just unshare my screen. Give me a wave if you're mostly read. Yeah. Red in the comments. Yep. Red. Okay. Who's got a bit of amber in there? Who's got some amber? There's a couple there. Anybody got all green? Who's got all green? Nobody. All right. Well, that's to be expected. Unfortunately, that is to be expected for most people. So you're not alone. Let's move on to the next one. Let's move on from fundamentals to cash flow. Now, when we talk about cash flow, the one I'm going to cover with you in brief today is income accelerators. Okay, I thought that'd be the most beneficial to do today. So let's ask you a few more questions. Now, again, no ego. I want you to answer very, very honestly. First question, do you know exactly what style of property you need to be accumulating to give you passive income and ultimately income replacement? Red, amber, or green? Next question, do you know how many properties you need to replace your income? Red, amber, or green? Third question, are you actively following a strategic plan to replace your income? Red, amber, or green? Now, some of you might be sitting there thinking, I don't want to replace my income. I'm happy doing what I'm doing. I spent 10 years at university to become whatever you are. I don't want to replace my income, and that's okay. But it's times like this when we realize that a job is not secure, even a business is not secure. You know, things can happen, which is why it is vitally important to have a safety net. And a safety net is income replacement, because then whatever you do to earn your income is a choice. You choose to go to work and do that job. You choose to run that business. It is a choice. It is not a have to. That is why income replacement is so important in everybody's strategic plan. Now, when we talk income properties, I sometimes call them just cash cows. So cash cows, income properties, same thing. They're either direct or indirect. Now, a direct income property is a property that from the day you buy it, when you add up all of the rent and you take off all of the expenses, including the mortgage or the rates, insurance, everything else, and the mortgage repayments, then it is positive cash flow. It still puts money in your pocket. I don't count depreciation. I think that's a bonus. Indirect properties is when you buy it, it's not positive cash flow, but when you do this, this, and this to it, you turn it into positive cash flow. Okay, so that's an indirect property. So when we talk cash cow, if you add up all the income, you take away all the expenses, including the mortgage repayment, and you end up with a positive amount, you've got yourself a cash cow. That's my definition. Now, when we start looking at positive cash flow properties, most people don't think it's possible, particularly if you live in a capital city. But seriously, I've got thousands of students across capital cities that have got positive cash flow properties in those cities. And the reason you don't think this is because of negative gearing. Negative gearing became a fad in the 1980s. It actually came into effect on the 18th of June, 1985. And then it was brought back into vogue in 1987. Ever since then, we have been sold negative gearing, negative gearing, negative gearing. And everything since then, people have got to a false sense of understanding that everything is negative cash flow, but it is not. It is not. There's plenty of deals that you can do that positive cash flow. You know, we have not lodged positive income tax returns as a nation since the year 2000, financial year 2000. Every year since then, we've gone negative. Now, that big one there, 2008, that was the start of GFC. Look what happened afterwards. Same thing's going to happen now. People need to sell properties because they're negative cash flow. It's a losing business. That's what it is. And when times get tough, you can't afford to have losing businesses. And that's what negative gearing is. So, you know, if you're not paying, if you're not making any money, you're not paying any tax. Tax is a good thing. You know, just give me a show on the chat room. I'm just going to bring up my chat room here. I think I have to close that to see the chat room. Maybe not. Yep. Oh, no, I don't. On the chat room, tell me who wants to pay $1 million in tax? $1 million. There you go. Yes, 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 yes. Me, 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 me. Hell yeah. All right. Thank you. If you're paying $1 million in tax, do you know how much money you're earning? Shitloads. Absolute mozza. So, you know, it's good to pay tax. If you're not paying tax, you're not earning any money. Now, obviously, I'm an accountant. I'm going to talk about how you can minimize your tax. But don't go out there on purpose to lose money just so you don't have to pay tax. In that 1 year, in 2008, the middle class lost $13 billion in tax. Sorry, in $13 billion in money, negative gearing. And that money went to banks and marketeers. That's where the money went. You don't want that. Negative gearing spiral looks something like this. You might be able to afford one house because you give up your coffees and your pizzas on Friday nights. And over time, that increases in value and then you get a little bit more equity. You might even be able to afford another one because you cut back on expenses. You might have got a pay rise maybe. You might be able to afford another one or even another one. But ultimately, you're going to get to the point where the banks say to you, you're at your maximum lending capacity. You don't want to get to that point. And negative gearing, every time you buy a negatively geared investment property, it puts you in a worse position for having that property than before you had it. Banks like you less. You've got less serviceability and you've got less money to go into the next deal. Yet, it's crazy, 2 in 3 investors choose negative gearing over positive cash flow. It's crazy. Crazy, crazy. Did you know that 90.8% of property investors only have one property, one or two? And the reason for that is because it hurts. You know, you buy a property that's negatively geared, it costs you money. You can't keep losing money like that. 7.5% own between 3 and 4 properties, and 1.7% own more than 5. Very, very few are in a position to be able to continue to invest because they are positively geared. Most people negatively gear. And when that's just of investors. But when we look at the whole population, 93.5% of the population are non-investors. Here's our tax rates. Have a look. That's what I was talking about before. They're the individual tax rates. Let me just do an example of compare the pair with negative gearing. I'm going to take Kevin and Julia. They both earn $100,000 salary. Kevin buys a negatively geared investment property of $10,000. Julia buys a property which is positively geared, $10,000. Okay. Here's their little chart. Kevin, first of all, earns his $100,000 and then he gets his negative gearing deduction. So he pays tax on $90,000. So after tax, he ends up with $203. Julia also earns $100,000, but she has to pay tax on $110,000 because she earns 10 grand from her positively geared investment property. So once she pays tax, her after-tax money is $81,803 after tax. That is a difference between the two of $12,600. Surely that hits home. Negative gearing keeps you in your job. Negative gearing keeps you in the rat race. Negative gearing stops you from being able to live the kind of life that you want. You know, when you look at the positive spiral, it looks like this. You buy a property. You got more cash flow. If you do a manufactured growth, you got more equity. You got more cash flow when you buy the second one. You're actually in a better position. The banks like you more. You got more serviceability, which means you can buy another one. You can buy another one. You can continue to buy properties because every property puts you in a better position than the one before. Let's have a look at a few examples. Now, this is an example of an indirect cash cow. It's a block of land. Now, I've chosen a few deals of students' deals, which are low-end deals. And I've done that on purpose because not everybody's got a lot of money. So this is a low-end deal. The property, the block of land in a rural area was advertised for $85,000, but it's got solid GVA. Now, GVA is a program that it's a strategy I teach you how to do, and it will tell you categorically what suburbs to invest in to make the most money out of manufactured growth. Give me a show on the chat room. Who wants to learn grid variance analysis? Come on. Everybody. All right. Now, I'm not going to teach it here. Thank you. I'm not going to teach it here because it's a process to teach you. But I will teach you in bootcamp. So for those of you who choose to come on and do the I Love Real Estate coaching and mentoring with me, then I will teach you how to do grid variance analysis. And it takes all of the guesswork out of investing, because there's a whole bunch of suburbs out there, but there's only probably a handful that are actually going to make you the most money. This property also ticked the boxes from some other analysis that I do, like demand and rentals and other things. Anyway, this is what they built on the property. Okay. Now, that's a construction deal. They made a small amount out of building it. The value after all the costs increased above the cost by about $75,000. Not huge, but that property is, sorry, $70,000. That property is $30,000 a year positively geared because of what they've been able to do with the income strategies. So $30,000 positive cash flow. Think about it. How many deals like that would you need to replace your income today? Starts to become very real, doesn't it? This is another real cheapie. It's in a regional area, this one here. You know, these people had no money. They joined the program on a credit card. They bought this property on a credit card. It's a $95,000 little triplex. Cost them $5,000 in cost to get into it, $20,000 in renovation. That renovation was paid for on an interest-free loan from IKEA. They bought everything at IKEA. But it revalued, it was, you know, 3 months worth of hard work for these guys. It revalued at $280,000, which gave them $160,000 equity, so their next deal could be a much easier deal than this one. And it's $16,000 a year positive cash flow. So if you're starting with not a lot of money, that's a great little starter. But not everybody's going to be going, I'm not prepared to do that. I'm not going to renovate. I'm not going to get hands on. That's okay. Many of you don't have to either. Many of you are sitting on sizable portfolios or decent portfolios or comfortable portfolios that, or equity or cash or whatever it is, that you don't have to do a hard deal. This is a hard deal, but you don't have to do a deal like that. If you're sitting there with not a cracker to your name, maybe you do need to do something like that. But most people don't, you know. This one here is an easy little turnaround deal. It actually ended up renting it out Airbnb, $25,000 net after all expenses on that particular property. Plus, it earned them a $91,000 uplift. This one here is a great deal for those of you who don't want to get dirty. This is a construction deal. It's about knowledge. It's about due diligence. It's about feasibilities. It's not about you physically having to do any of the work. So it's a bought it for $470,000. You spent about $2 million on which is mostly lending on the development of 6 units. They sold 4-5 of them and kept one with no debt, and they rented out $22,000 a year positive cash flow. That deal in uplift in value gave them a $469,000 uplift in value. So that's the value of their unit that they have left with zero debt on it. Now, for some of you, that's a great deal. That's the type of deal you should be doing. For some of you, it's stuff like this. This is just high yield resi. The last one there is construction. So they made $680,000 on the construction plus $30,000 passive income, $22,000 on the middle one and $31,000 on the first one there. These ones here are high yield short stay accommodation here, $29,000 on that first one. The next one, they didn't even own the property. They just took control of it under a contract and make $15,000 a year on a property they don't even own. Now, anybody can go and do that. Anybody can do that. The other one was actually cleaning up and doing a bit of a reno on a downstairs area on their property. They rented out short stay, and $26,000 a year passive income. That pays their mortgage on their home. So they can now live there mortgage free. For many of you, that's a possibility as well. Some of you, it's going to be commercial. Now, the thing I like about this particular commercial is storage sheds work on the residential cycle. They don't work on the commercial cycle. So what that means is these types of deals are going to respond and rebound more quickly than some of the other commercial stuff, although I am very keen on industrial anyway. So $57,000 passive income on this one. Again, how many of those would you need to replace your income today? This is a lease and sublease in Sydney, $13,000 a year positive cash flow. You know, you don't even own the property. That property is not owned by the person that makes the $13,000, that student. Now, any one of you could go and do that. Any one of you could do what this student's done and create over $100,000 worth of passive income in a matter of months in the Sydney market without having to own the majority of the properties. It's about control. It's not about ownership. This one's a little cheapy. It was a regional one in Victoria. Bought it for $210,000, spent about $50 on it, and it's $35,000 a year positive cash flow. But for me, it's about the stories. Gloria. Gloria's a single mum. Got two kids, brought them up herself since they were very little. And she goes to work. She earns $45,000 in her full-time job. She realised she needed to do something else. She was getting older and she started to think about a retirement and it wasn't looking that flash. So the kids are getting up a bit now, so she didn't have to think so much about them and she needed to invest in herself. She joined I Love Real Estate. Now, it took Gloria a little while to get going, and the reason for that is Gloria was scared. Gloria was needed to learn a lot. She's had no training in this area at all. And she was scared of losing what she'd already been able to accumulate. She owned her own home, her and the bank, and she was scared. She'd been a single mum for a long time. But once she got going and she got into the community and she started to see this person do that and get that result and this person do that and get that result, she started small. But over a couple of years, she created $71,000 worth of passive income. Now, that's a massive story for her. Some of you might go, I need more than 71. That's okay. That's more than she was earning working 9 to 5, 5 days a week. Have a listen to her story.
My name is Gloria Aston and I'm from New South Wales. I had only my PPR at the time before joining the real estate community. My biggest fear was that I'd make a wrong investment choice and that I would lose everything that I worked very hard for as a single parent. So before DIPNA, like I said, I had no income apart from my job and my equity position was 395. Now my equity position today is 626,000. And my income now is $71,000 profit, positive cash flow per annum. So very happy with the results.
Good on you, Gloria. And the thing with Gloria is once she started to take control of her finances, one part of her life, she started to take control of other parts of her life as well, including losing weight, getting fitter, being a mentor for her kids. Everything changed, you know, for Gloria as a result of taking that course of action. Many people come to me in situations like this where they've got a few properties, these guys had quite a few, and they were highly negatively geared. $91,000 a year negative cash flow. That meant that one of them had to work all year just to pay for the negative gearing on their property. Crazy, right? So it takes time to turn that around. A couple of years and they turned that around to $27,000 positive cash flow. And that was just a snapshot in time. They've gone on to do, you know, other things from there. So $117,000 turnaround in cash flow. Have a listen to their story.
So our situation, we joined, we were on 16 properties and negative 90,000 negatively geared. We were in a difficult position and we didn't even think about positive cash flow and didn't really think it was actually real. Getting educated has really definitely helped us a lot understand where we need to be and what we need to do going forward. Okay, so we're sitting at 11 properties at the moment, about 8 mil, equity about 4 mil. So from being negatively geared up to 90 grand, we're about neutrally geared now. But from December onwards, we'll be about 27K positive, which is great.
And we'll get better from there.
Yes. Yeah.
Good on you guys. You know, I can teach you a myriad of income strategies that work. Everything from direct cash cows to executive leasing, you've got unit blocks, you've got rooming houses and boarding houses, you've got Airbnb, you've got commercial properties, you've got debt reduction strategies, you've got partial sell downs, you've got subleases, you've got dual locks, you've got granny flats, you've got business real estate. I could go on and on and on. The reality is that there's lots of ways to create a passive income. It's about getting the right strategy that's right for you and probably stacking strategies where you have a number of strategies stacked on top of each other. But as I said, you know, it's the stories that really get me. These guys here, Sergio and Charity, these guys are good examples of people who, I'm not saying they are, but are intro surfers. I see a lot of familiar faces over the years that come to my intros of days like this, and they learn a bit and they think they know everything and they, oh no, I don't need to do the course. You know, I know enough. You know, I learned enough. I can do a trust. I got my lawyer. I can do this. I'll buy a positive cash flow property. I can do a subdivision. I can whatever. They go off and they do some of it. Sometimes they get it totally ass about when they talk about structures. They get that totally wrong. They think they know, but they don't. They miss the finer points of exactly how things need to be done, and they get conned along the way. You know, like Sergio and Charity, they went off, yep, we need to do positive cash flow property. Great, yep, they did that. They got 10 grand passive income, and I'm not knocking that. It's good. But look what they can do when you get serious, when they joined the program and they got serious about income replacement. They replaced $255,000 worth of passive income, and they went out and got a $48,000 positive cash flow property for their parents who were living on a pension. You know, that's life changing. He's full-time property investing now. That's what they do. They can spend more time with that little baby, and, you know, life's very, very different. So I encourage you to stop intro surfing. For those of you who've made a habit of just have a look at this and have a little and pick up a bit here, a bit there, a bit whatever, but never really put a proper strategic plan together, stop it now. Now is not the time to be fat-assing around, I can tell you. I Love Real Estate changes lives. You know, here's some of the pictures from the most recent I Love Real Estate boot camp that we did with all some of the prizes that we gave away. I give away boot camps, computers and iPads and holidays. And one year I even gave away a house, and that was kind of cool too. So when it comes to passive income, how are you placed? You mostly red? Are you amber? Or are you mostly green? I'm just going to open up my chat room so I can see. Answer me. What are you? Are you mostly red? I can see you all now. Yep, mostly red. Lots of red coming up. Who's got a bit of amber? Bit of amber, okay. Who's all green?
Okay, that was powerful. I hope you enjoyed that. There was a lot of valuable information there, especially around structuring at the early parts. And again, I reinforce that if you really want to get that, it was probably hard for you to follow along. But if you really want to nail that, you probably want to see a live event. So go to iloverealestate.tv and see if you can get you secure yourself a live ticket to conquer the chaos. And the second part, as we finished off, was the property blueprint, which is fundamental to success for any investor. And it's what has distinguished Dipner and her community in the Isle of Real Estate community above anybody else out there teaching, is a specific system that you can follow, and specific accelerators that you can also follow as well, that will, you know, through trial and error, of course, Dipner's worked out that these are the you know, the key things that will improve your investment, full stop. So I hope you enjoyed that session. There is a lot more still to come. We'll be going into part 5 of Conquer the Chaos, our replay series, our special podcast series here, where we're highlighting what we've covered live. And in part 5, we'll be talking about how to create your own property boom, the strategies, the tactics, where you can actually create your own property boom and get a double whammy, especially in this marketplace, as now we get into a situation where it will turn and is starting to turn into a buyer's market. So it is very valuable information and very highly profitable right now in the next 3, 6, and 12 months. So I hope you enjoyed our part 4 of Conquer the Chaos, and I look forward to seeing you part 5.
Nobody's all green. Well, that's where we've got to be. We've got to be all green. Let me just close that down. So we've done 2. We've done 1 out of 2. And we've only really skimmed the surface with those as well.